Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with certified physician assistant and RD, Colleen Sloan. Colleen talks to us about how to have nutrition conversations with your physician when time is short, things to track beyond weight, and tips for picky eaters. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes for more details. Now on to my conversation with Colleen. Colleen Sloan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I'm so excited to chat with you.
I'm really excited to talk about all things nutrition coaching, nutritional treatments today. And to kick us off with, I'd love to hear from you. What's the number one thing you're excited for our listeners to learn from our conversation today?
Well, I think it's really important for everyone to understand and to deeply believe that we are worth more than our weight is. And, I think it's so crucial to really deeply know that and trust that your identity isn't what the scale says. Your identity isn't wrapped up in your BMI or what the clinician says that you are. You're worth so much more than that. And so I think that if we can have that, perspective, we'll just live such a more beautiful and rich life.
What a beautiful message. I'm excited to dig into all of the things associated with that. And yeah, why don't you tell us how your path was to becoming a registered dietitian?
Yeah, so like a lot of 18-year-olds, I was sitting with my dad after high school, and I'm like, "Dad, I don't know what I want to do for college. I don't really know what I want to major in." And he's like, "You're so smart. You should just become a doctor." And this was true. I am pretty smart and I love medicine. And I had the idea that I wanted to go into medicine. So, okay, but what do I major in, right? Like, what do I decide? And I wasn't interested in biology. I didn't want to do biochemistry or take the traditional route. And so I followed my mom, who was a college textbook sales rep. And I went to a college with her one day, and I actually walked the halls of the nutrition department and got to speak with a lot of dietitians and sort of learn what that curriculum was like. Because prior to that, I had no idea even what a dietitian was. I didn't know that was a field that existed. And that day, I told my dad, I'm like, I want to be a dietitian. Like, this sounds awesome. I'm so into health. I was an athlete my entire life, so I was really, really interested in really getting deep into that. And so that led me to pursue my bachelor's degree in nutrition and dietetics from Florida International University.
Very cool. Well, it sounds like a good path, and love that you just generally express an interest in medicine. And I think most people that are working in the fitness, nutrition sort of space, we all have a similar angle. And yeah, it's great that we can specialize in whatever we are good at. And so what I'm really curious about to start off with, I know we don't have, as a primary audience, other practitioners, but nonetheless, maybe even as a patient, you're often wondering, why is my time so short with a registered dietitian, with a physician that I might be seeing in there? You just kind of feel like a number when you are when you have an appointment, and they might look at blood work or they might ask you a few basic questions, and you're walking out of there either with more question marks or feeling like you didn't really get anything out of that. And so I would love to hear from you, for the practitioners more than the patients, perhaps. What are some of your recommendations to avoid that from happening, that your patient walks out feeling like, what just happened? Really nothing. And what are some ways that we can have some nutritional conversations with our patients, even though time is short?
You are so right. Time is short, unfortunately. It's especially in America, it is just the way that medicine has gone. Every second counts for reimbursement purposes, and we're trying to squeeze every minute out of the day to make a buck, essentially. And these corporations are dictating a lot of our schedules. And I hold a very unique lens in that I'm a dietitian, but also a PA. So I really do feel that tension when it comes to wanting to give nutrition advice and answering all of my patients' questions, but then also having that time limitation that I know I only have 10 minutes with this patient sitting in front of me. And it's really difficult. I want patients to understand that often it's not our choice. Your provider would actually probably love to spend 45 minutes to an hour sitting with you and really unpacking all of your questions. unfortunately, it's just not the way that medicine is done these days. And I'm hoping that it's changing, right? With a lot of doctors opening up their own private practice and things like that. So hopefully this will change. But we do have to work with what we've got. And I think there are ways to do that. So if you're a clinician, even like a health coach or anything like that, I think the very first thing would be to set the priority and let your patient know upfront, hey, I have 10 minutes, 15 minutes. We've got 5 minutes left today. Or, give them that time frame so they are on the same page with you and they understand, okay, we've got this limitation. I want to get out the most I can from this. Once you set that expectation, I think a great follow-up question would be, what are the most important things that you wanted to discuss today? Or what are your top three concerns? And I find if you can sort of narrow it down and kind of direct that conversation with your client sitting in front of you, it really helps to kind of tell them, hey, the hangnail that you have or the back pain that you have, if that's not your priority today, let's, put that on the shelf. Let's talk about that next time. I really want to focus on what is your biggest concern. Because if you can do that, giving the patient the ability to steer the conversation, because we don't know, I'm not a mind reader. I don't know, Lisa, if you sit down, if you're worried about, your skin, or if you're worried about your weight, or if you're worried about your bowel movements or something else, I have no idea because I'm looking at you head to toe, and then if you don't tell me, I'll just kind of choose something that I think would be a priority. And so aligning your goals as the patient and the provider really helps take advantage of the limited time you have. So those would probably be my top two tips for really just navigating, the time limitation that you have with clients.
I think that's really great. I could imagine that it might even be helpful for the patient slash client to walk into a meeting like that with almost a list. So like if you before that, okay, you recognize my provider has very limited amount of time over the weeks leading up to my appointment, I'm gonna sort of accumulate a list of things that I want to talk about and then kind of rank that hierarchy. You might not get through all 5 to 10 things, but also not just the 5 minutes before the appointment, but like literally like a week or two beforehand starting, because maybe one day you remember one thing, another day you remember you're always constipated, the next day you remember you're sore when you're waking up on that side, or like whatever it might be. And I think also to the notion of setting priorities, that's great to highlight, because I think sometimes people feel obligated to make 3 minutes of small talk. But like, let's face it, if you have 15 minutes with your provider, that's a fifth of your time. Like, don't freaking waste it on the bloody weather that that provider has already talked about 7 times with other patients beforehand. They don't care. Like, don't feel like I get where that is coming from, because you want to connect on an emotional level probably with the provider, but like, face it that you only have 15 minutes when they're telling you like, lovely to see you today, Jenny, we have 15 minutes, let's just dive right in and get the small talk out of the way if we bump into each other over coffee. But yeah.
Yes, very good point about the small talk. And it's not to say that you're just trying to rush people along and tell me what you need to know, because there is an art to building rapport with patients, and I find that really comes out of being curious. And you can still have small talk, but still redirect it to the purpose of the visit today. Although a lot of clients and providers are, quote, friends, I think it's still really important to remember, like, you're here to see me today because you have XYZ problem, and I want to help you achieve that or to overcome that. I want to help you problem solve that. So let's just get into that. And so there is some tactful, respectful ways to let them know, like, we're going to cut through the small talk and let's really just get to what you're here for, what you're concerned about. Because, and it could be the reverse. I've had some providers who are really overly chatty. And then they're like, oh, well, that's all we've got today. And I, as the patient, didn't have time to express my concerns. So I think it's appreciated both ways if you set the time limitation up front. And I love when patients come with a list. I have some colleagues that don't like it. I personally love it. And I have a lot of my patients write a list. I will tell them, hey, we only got to talk about this today. How about you schedule a follow-up in 2 weeks? But in the meantime, keep a list of all your questions so that we can jump right into it and not waste any time at the next visit. So I work with a lot of new moms, and they really appreciate that too, because they just kind of hand me the list, or even the dad, if they're bringing in the child for the mom, they're like, "Mom said, show you this list, and these are all her questions." And it's a great way to not waste time. I don't feel burnt out because I'm not just spewing information and facts that the client really doesn't want to know or need to know. I'm giving them the information, answering exactly the questions and concerns that they're coming with. So I'm a big fan of coming prepared with lists of questions and things, and then trying, saying, "Hey, we might not get through all of this, but schedule a visit with me in a week, 2 weeks, and we can address the rest of them. But what are your main concerns so we have time to address those today?"
Yeah, that's great to know that you as a provider are also a proponent of lists, because I sometimes have all these things floating through my head over the course of the time, and then when I'm in front of the person, it's like blank and one thing pops out of me that I remember and I'm like, crap, there was so much more. And then you leave the office and it's like all coming back at you and you're like, oh, okay, great. I guess I'll wait 6 months
Yeah.
with these questions until my next follow-up appointment. So no, that's really
Yeah.
great to know. And yeah, let's get a little bit more into like the nutritional aspect, because again, like sometimes people or providers are not so focused on that aspect. Maybe also because they might not feel, like let's say if they're not a specific registered dietitian, then just general healthcare providers, their knowledge or renewed knowledge of nutrition might be quite ancient. Let's say someone's been practicing for 20 years and the only nutritional co course that they attended was like 20 years ago or so, which would be unfortunate. But I guess I'm curious to hear your recommendations for providers. Like, what are some ways to motivate your patients to even think about the importance of nutrition, and then kind of like to get them to actually implement some of the recommendations that you might be giving?
Well, first of all, I think it's really important to start off by asking permission. Don't just assume that the client, the patient sitting in front of you, even wants to talk about nutrition or their weight. Whether they are of healthy weight or in a person in a larger body, don't just assume that they want your opinion on their diet and they want to lose weight. So I love asking permission before I even talk about that. It also shows that you respect the patient. That it's okay if you don't want to talk about this. If this is not your priority, if you came in to talk about your wrist pain and a rash and something else, I'm totally fine if we don't address the nutrition and the weight, because you want the patient to feel very comfortable. You want them to feel seen, you want them to feel heard, valued, respected, and not judged. So a couple of ways I like to start this conversation is through asking permission about, number one, is it okay if we talk about your weight today? Right? And that's a very simple way. And it's just a simple yes or no question. And if they say no, you do need to respect that. Maybe they're not in that mental frame to have that conversation. Maybe they just had a really bad day, or they just don't feel good about their body today. And it's not right. We can't push that on them. But if they say yes, that's great. That's an open window to then move into. If you're in, pediatrics, showing the growth charts, you've got changes over time, or if you've been working with this person for a while, you can kind of show them, like, this is where you were at last time, and here we are today. And if it's on the increase, the next question that I like to ask is another way to ask permission is, would it be okay if we talked about your nutrition or what your eating habits look like? Again, I'm asking yes or no. Would it be okay? Are you comfortable with? Do you mind if we discuss, right? We're talking about nutrition and weight, and these are very personal things that people have a lot of sensitivities to. So we want to be very careful upfront to make sure they're comfortable with it. And then if they are fine with it and they are like, yeah, let's talk about it. I need some advice. I need some help. I lead with curiosity. Instead of just giving the advice and the knowledge that you know of things that you think might help them, you've got to find out more about them before you can just jump and say, oh, you know what? Intermittent fasting worked for me. Why don't you try intermittent fasting? Or you should just be eating plant-based. Like, let's cut out all meat. That might not work for some people. It might for a few, but not for everybody. So we ask permission, and then we get really curious about the client sitting in front of you. So asking things like, what is a typical day of eating work for you? If that is too broad, break it up. When is the first meal that you eat? And I like to call it the first meal as opposed to breakfast, because if you've got like a teen or an older adult, sometimes they're not waking up until like 1 o'clock. And they'll say, like, I don't eat breakfast, but they do because they eat at 1:30. You know, it's the first meal. So I love saying framing it like that. What's the first meal? What time is it? What is it? Next meal, next meal. You know, do you have any snacks? And then a big one is, what are you drinking throughout the day? A lot of times we'll hear patients say, like, I don't eat that much, or I really do eat really healthy. And then you're wondering, like, oh, why are we gaining weight? Like, what, something's missing. And a lot of times it is those beverages. So if they're having, you know, stopping at Starbucks or a coffee restaurant before work, and they're getting a delicious, creamy, sweetened Frappuccino or whatever, they're easily getting 50 grams of sugar in that drink. And then maybe they have a lemonade or sweet tea with lunch. Maybe they do go to the gym and they're having like a Gatorade or an electrolyte supplement that they might not know has sugar in it, which for athletes is great, but not for everybody. And then dinner, they're having a glass of wine with an Arnold Palmer or something. So many added calories are just in our liquids that we drink. So I love staying and focusing on beverages consumed, because that's a really easy win to kind of make some tweaks, especially if you feel like, wow, your meals are actually great. The other thing I love to find out is kind of the hidden foods that we snack on throughout the day. Busy moms are really notorious for this. They'll either skip breakfast or have maybe a protein shake, and then they're running out the door getting their kids ready, and they'll finish the kids, you know, plate of pancakes, and then they'll eat their lunch, but then they'll also grab a handful of goldfish from their kids' plate. And then dinner's kind of the same thing. Maybe they didn't get to sit down and eat because they were feeding and wiping mouths and picking up food from the floor, but they finished the bowl of the kids' mac and cheese. And then finally, when kids are in bed, they're like, I'm exhausted. I deserve a treat. And we have sweets because they feel good and it's just joy in our lives. And so those little bites throughout the day, people often don't calculate when they're telling us how many calories, if they're counting their calories, they're consuming. So I find those hidden calories are also a really important thing to kind of unpack. And then another two questions that I like to, three that I like to ask about is sleep. So how is your sleep? Do you wake up feeling rested? Or what time are you going to bed? What time are you waking up? Do you feel like you sleep through the night? Because we've so much literature has shown that sleep really does affect our weight, our appetite throughout the day. Stress management is another thing that's really important and impactful in our health. And so I always love to ask, like, how's your stress levels? Like, do things stress you out? And of course, right? Like, we're in a very stressful time, so it's kind of a rhetorical question. But once they say, like, yeah, I'm really stressed, I love to ask, well, how do you manage your stress? You know, what are some skills, and how do you navigate that? How do you cope with your stress? Because a lot of us cope with eating or binge watching TV, and that's, you know, some unhealthy behaviors. And so the last question that I always find out about is their physical activity. So how are you moving your body throughout the day? Do you think you get maybe 10 minutes or more of physical activity during the day? And I like to start low, because for the people who are very sedentary, you know, 10 minutes a day might be their goal. But if the person is really, really active, they can kind of answer as like, oh yeah, I work out an hour a day. But if they aren't even getting 10 minutes a day of just simple walking, that's something that you can really focus on. Once you gather that information, right, I'm still not giving advice. I am finding out about my client. I'm learning about their habits. I'm learning about their schedule, their preferences, what their lifestyle looks like, and where there's some gaps. And I might say, okay, it sounds like you have a very stressful job, and that kind of tends to make you eat like emotionally, like when you're stressed out, or because you're so stressed and busy, it sounds like you're skipping a lot of meals and that makes you overeat at night. Or it sounds like, you know, you're not very active, and so I think that is a place that you can improve on. So reflecting back by saying it sounds like, you're just repeating what they've told you so that the patient can kind of think about it and process it. And then finally, before I even give advice, I'll offer a few ideas or suggestions, and in different categories. So I might say, it sounds like sleep is an issue for you. Would you like more information on how we can improve, you know, the hour before bed so you can get a good night's rest? Or if you're not interested in that, maybe we can work on your diet a little bit. I have a few ideas that have worked with other clients on how we can improve your diet. If you don't want to do that, how about we talk about some physical activity, and I have some ideas of ways you can increase your activity, and it won't be too much extra work for you. So which one of those would you like to work on? Would you like more information on? So again, I'm kind of laying it all out and putting it back to the patient to say, okay, I don't really want to work my diet. I don't want to sleep better. I love staying up late, but I think I might be able to, work on my exercise. So what ideas? So now as a provider, you're not wasting your breath or your time sharing information on sleep and nutrition, because all they really care about in that moment is physical activity. That's what they've agreed on that they think is possible for them. So then you can lead with that instead of just sharing blanket information that the patient won't be successful if it's not something that they feel like they can do currently right where they're at.
Well, there is so much to unpack, Colleen. I love it all. First of all, the approach of simply being curious. What a wonderful mindset for a provider, a coach, whatever to have. And I'm maybe you have heard this before also, but some of my clients or even friends have told me that they went to, they invested even in a nutrition coach or working with a nutritionist, and that person did not even ask them, like, what's your current state of knowledge, sort of thing. And like, many of these people have taken various nutrition courses, they have tried various diets, and then the nutritionist or a provider is like laying out, oh, by the way, you should eat more vegetables, and protein is important. And they're like, well, no shit. I've heard that for the last 20 years. Can we kind of like go a little bit deeper? But then the time is already up, type of thing. So it's like, yeah, if that provider would have asked them like about their dieting history or about what they're currently doing, they would not have started with the very basics. And likewise, if you have someone coming in who doesn't eat a single piece of green, but you're starting to tell them about, hey, you should get 23 grams of fiber, ideally 16 from soluble and, whatever, 17 from insoluble, that person's gonna be like, what? So yeah, like meeting the person where they're at, I think is so important, and like just having that curiosity, very, very cool. And the other thing that I wanted to touch on, and I think like this is helpful for both providers and also patients, is those little like snacks and licks and bites and zips that we tend to take and we don't even count. So I don't know about you, but if you do st or you might start working with someone more in more detail on their nutrition, maybe you get them to give a full dietary record, or even get them to track their food. We use an app called MyFitnessPal for that with the clients that we take on. And sometimes, exactly like you're saying, people, you look at it and you're like, that actually looks really good. It doesn't really explain why you've just gained like 20 pounds in the last, 5 months or so. And then you're like, well, number one, are you logging literally everything, like the drinks? Oh no, wait, I forgot about that. And then you're like, okay, you said you have a salad. Can you kind of specify what you mean by a salad? Because you kind of logged that side salad for 200 calories there, and then it turns out, well, actually, that salad had nuts and cheese. It had a creamy ranch dressing and croutons, and chances that that was 200 calories are like zero to maybe 0.5% type of thing. Much more likely to have 800 to 1,000 calories, right? So it's like eye-opening when you kind of go into everything, and people might be like, oh, right, like they don't have a bad in the intention of reporting it falsely, but it's just you're not aware of all these things adding up, and you think a bite here, a lick there, a zip here is not gonna make a difference, but it can easily add up to several hundred more calories there. So yeah, I think that's a really great point that you raised. And lastly, I love what you said about reflecting it back. And I mean, that's a great technique, not just for a provider and patient relationship. I think it's a great tip for any kind of conversation that we might have in life, whether it's with our romantic partner or friend or whatever, just kind of reassuring that we heard them correctly, because that person might say like, okay, you got parts of that right, but I actually said a whole lot more that was important, or actually you misunderstood. I do work out, or like whatever it might be. It just gives them the chance to like correct, or as you mentioned, to affirm that you're both on the same page and actually talking about the same thing. So, yeah, so many wonderful strategies that you mentioned there. And so, like going forward from that now, a lot of people might think, okay, cool, I'm open to working on my nutrition or on my weight. What I'm sure you would agree on, though, is we don't want to be hyper focused on just the body weight on the scale. So what would be some things that we could or should be mindful of or should be tracking outside of weight when it comes to just overall health?
Such a good question. It's one of my favorite things to talk about with patients, especially women, in our middle age, because we've grown up with diet culture. We've grown up kind of obsessed about our bodies and what the scale says. And with so much new research coming out, they're finding that you can be in a larger body and be perfectly healthy. Now, it's very hard to accept that if you've been told all the time, all these years, that you need to be thin in order to be healthy and beautiful and loved. And so I think having that component of some counseling can help with that. But there are so many other things that I find are actually even more impactful to track than weight alone. And I find that for clients who've been kind of obsessed about their weight or only ever track that, is to get rid of the scale, go put it up in the garage in the top shelf with Christmas decorations, get it away out of sight so you're not tempted to even step on it, and maybe bring it out in 6 months or something to at least, so then you can see. But tracking your weight daily is never really helpful or healthful because our weight fluctuates so much, especially as women, with our hormone changes, our menstruation changes, fluid shifts. I mean, even if you had like a carb heavy meal the day before, you're going to put on at least maybe even 3 to 5 pounds just from water trying to hold on to those carbs. So I always recommend that we track first and foremost other things besides weight. And then weight is sort of going to be a byproduct. We talk about it like weight loss is kind of a side effect of all these behaviors are going to be changing. And so I like to find out if patients want to track anything. Some individuals who are very numbers oriented and they're like, oh, I have to track a number, then I suggest tracking labs and like blood pressure and things like that. So we might do some screening blood work on blood sugar, maybe the A1C, your lipids, your triglycerides. We can track your fatty liver. So get a liver panel. And even like blood pressure, if blood pressure has been elevated. So those are great numbers to track. And then you can do it, in 3 months and 6 months and something like that, and just kind of see how these nutrition changes are affecting you, your body, not just your weight. If they are not as interested in labs, or maybe their labs are okay, I always ask them, like, what do you want to do that you can't do now? So for example, maybe it's a grandparent or a parent, and they're like, I would just love to go to the park with my kid and not be exhausted within 2 minutes. Or I want to get up and down on the ground and playing with my toddler without just my knees hurting, my back hurting. If it is a professional, maybe they're a speaker, they want to feel confident on the stage, right? Or they want to just feel good wearing their suit. They don't want it to feel so tight and uncomfortable. They want it to just be like, I look good. Maybe it's a grandma and her daughter is getting married in 6 months, and she's got a sleeveless dress and she really wants to feel beautiful in this dress. Those are some incredible non-scale victories that you can manage and work on with the patient. And I think that's such a helpful practice, is to have the patient write all of those down. Sometimes we'll write their goal or dream weight on a top piece of paper, but underneath that, I would always ask them, like, okay, if you get to this weight, what are all the things you're going to do or feel? And they're going to write, I'm going to feel beautiful, confident, have more energy, more, maybe more stamina, whether it's in the gym or with your spouse or your significant other. There's so many things. I want to sleep better. I want to just feel better, look good in a bikini. Writing all of those out, and you'll find that really none of them actually have anything to do with their weight. It actually has to do with all of these other things. So that's where I would direct that conversation. If it's really getting too weight obsessed, is just talking about some of those non-scale victories that you can track and then celebrate that with them.
Oh yeah, great addition there at the end with regards to celebrating that, because I think sometimes we're just like we might see it on paper and we're like, oh, okay, cool, that improved, and it's like, hey, you put them in the work. Let's make sure we're celebrating that. Or even things I could imagine tracking, things like HRV, for example, could be a cool thing to focus on when you're like, you're super stressed, you're not sleeping that well, you're not recovering that well. Let's make sure we're looking at that a little bit, not like hyper focusing on it and not, know, directing our workouts completely just according to that or so. But that could be a good goal to have, that we're bringing up your monthly average from half a year ago, over the next few months or so. Or then again, like tracking lifts in the gym, like you mentioned, or even just like movement patterns or anything like that. I could imagine even things like, hey, have we included five different kinds of vegetables in your day? Because I know that you really don't like them, but let's try to get them in. I guess on that point, do you have any specific recommendations for how people that are a little bit more picky, how they can incorporate more micronutrient dense foods into their diet?
Oh, this is such a good question. And, we tend to think of like picky eaters it as kids, but it's so funny because adults are kind of selective too. Like we all have preferences. There's not a lot of people that I know that are like, oh yeah, I love all fruits and veggies, right? We've got our handful of ones that we continue to go to. And some people it's none or maybe one. And so I like to start there. Can you name one vegetable or one fruit that you actually like? 99% of the time, I would say majority of people have at least one that they don't absolutely detest. And so I'll start and say, okay, if you don't mind broccoli, can you just double the portion that you're already consuming? Can we get more of it into your diet? And if they're like, oh yeah, I could totally do that, great. And then if we're going to be trying new foods, I like to suggest and help them, like, how can we make it taste better for you? Like, do you like sauces? Like, people are so afraid of sauces and seasonings and, oh, it's got too much salt, too much sugar. But if it can be a gateway or a bridge to letting the patient learn how to like that vegetable, great. I'm all for that. So if you are obsessed with ketchup, hey, throw ketchup on green beans. I don't care if it doesn't make sense. Like, that's fine because you're getting the nutrients. Just because you're putting a sauce on something, it doesn't negate the micronutrients that are in that fruit or that vegetable. So same goes for like some sweet stuff, right? Fruit pairs really nicely with peanut butter or like Nutella. And yes, the goal would be to get the patient to eat fruit plain by itself. But again, if it's that bridge to get them there, I'm all for that. And I think that's a win. So that's one, is playing up to the flavors and the textures that the patient is already does like. And then also learning how to cook. It's shocking that so many people really have no idea how to make food flavorful and taste good. So maybe even if they have the finances to take a cooking class, that can sometimes be a really fun bonding experience with a significant other. If they don't have that, honestly, YouTube has tons of free stuff out there. They can make it a date night and just learn how to bring in and draw in flavors with the foods that you're preparing. Because if it tastes good, we are way more likely to consume it. Now, for the most picky of all, and they're like, nope, won't do any of that, then I suggest, hey, okay, can we chop it up super, super fine or blend it? At least then getting it in there. So blending spinach, blueberries, bananas, all kinds of different berries into a smoothie in the morning is a really, really good way to at least start the day with some greens and some fruits. And then chopping up, I mean, cauliflower chops really well, broccoli, the same thing. Spinach, kale, greens chopped super, super fine. And you can throw it in like sauces. You can mix it into meatloaf and sort of make the meat with veggies in there, and you pretty much don't even taste it. So at least that's a start, and you're getting them used to having those and at least getting some of those nutrients in there. And that can be a really fun way for the most selective eaters when it comes to veggies.
Yeah, I love that last point. Exactly, like I think often for kids, like working something like carrots or something into a meatball or into a meatloaf, or I think even like thinking of things that you generally enjoy, let's just say like eggs or something like that. Can we work some vegetable into scrambled eggs or little egg cups or an egg bite, or can we grate some, Parmesan or whatever on that broccoli that you mentioned? I think that's a really good idea. I do always like to point out though to people that if you don't initially like it per se, don't expect the food to taste as good as the regular non-vegetable version. So like let's just say if you love meatloaf and you're then gonna add carrots and zucchini and more tomatoes to the meatloaf and you think it's gonna taste exactly the same way, it's not going to, but it might taste like 90% of that? And is that something that we can live with, thinking of the nutritional benefits you're going to get long term? Yes. And like I try to make that same argument when I try to get people away from like those really sugary coffees, for instance. Let's just say you're having a full fat whipped cream mocha with a double shot of whatever sugary syrup. Okay, next week, can we try to have that without the sugary syrup, but exactly the same? It's not going to taste the same, but it's still going to taste good. Okay, a month later, can we try to get it without the whip, perhaps? It's not going to taste the same. It's still going to taste like 80% good. And like slowly weaning yourself off. And I think you can also slowly wean yourself on to something, because our taste buds are actually really adaptive. But sometimes we try to go from like the cheesy ranch, whatever drenched bean to just steamed beans with nothing on it. And of course that's not the same thing. Like let's kind of slowly go step by step. But yeah, I loved all your tips there. And I'm curious, because you also have a nutrition course, I think the exam room nutrition course, and I'd love to hear kind of like the curriculum of that, like if you have certain modules and what you talk about in this course.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited for this course because it's dedicated for clinicians or health professionals. So coaches, dietitians, PAs, NPs, doctors. It's not necessarily for the lay public, although the information would be helpful, but it's also has approved for medical continuing education. So that's a really nice value there. But the goal is for clinicians who want to learn more about nutrition for weight management and nutrition counseling. Because it's one thing to have the knowledge about how to get a patient to lose weight and get them to their optimal, their goal weight. It's another with the language to use and how to motivate patients, how to get them to actually change, right? That is like probably the most frustrating part of working in patient care. And honestly, probably with ourselves, we get really frustrated. We're like, I want to do this, but why on earth can't I do it? And so there's a lot of different strategies and throughout the course that help with navigating that. And so it kind of walks you through. I think there's 12 or 13 different modules. I'm a speaker for a few, but I've also brought in a lot of different professionals because I'm also a proponent of it not being an expert in everything and bringing in someone who is. And so I don't, for example, prescribe GLP-1 medication. So I brought in a doctor who does. And she did that module on going over the medications, who qualifies, how to troubleshoot them, how to, titrate up or down. So there's a module directly related to anti-obesity medications. We've got stuff from starting out to like how when a patient asks like, "Hey, what diet should I go on?" Sort of how to navigate that, how to offer those options and help your patient choose one that might be appropriate for them, and then it might be totally different for the next patient. So sort of determining the best dietary approach for that patient in front of you, and then some of those counseling skills of getting the patient motivated, helping them change, helping them set those goals and maintain them. And then we also talked about body composition a lot. So why we're moving away from BMI and other things to track, like we discussed, talking about those non-scale victories. And then more towards the end, we do discuss a few counseling tips like intuitive eating and motivational interviewing. So a few of those strategies that work really well for a lot of patients who maybe are just struggling to find that internal motivation, or who've maybe been on the yo-yo dieting, wheel forever, and how to help them get off of that. And then one of the final courses is navigating failures. So, if the patient has just been, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, or I've like lost weight, gained weight, lost weight, gained weight, how do we help them with that mindset and reminding them that they aren't a failure, that just that plan or that program that they were on failed them. And then we can readjust and work in those areas. And then I have a few special population modules talking about women, so perimenopause and menopause, because that field is very different from maybe a young 20-year-old who wants to lose weight versus a 45, 55-year-old woman who wants to lose weight. And so we have a whole module dedicated on that type of nutrition counseling for that individual. And then same for bariatric patients. So either if they are considering bariatric surgery or have had bariatric surgery, how do we help them navigate their nutrition? So really comprehensive. I'm really, really excited about this course. And we'll also have, private community for that ongoing support. So we can discuss some patient cases a couple of Q&As with some of the speakers. So a really, really comprehensive program that I'm just super excited to have available.
Sounds really cool. I'm definitely going to make sure to link it in the show notes so people can go and check it out. It certainly sounds like you're providing a lot of value, and I love how you're getting experts in to just speak more about these specific topics. And yet, to round us off with, I'd love to kind of go back to where we started with regards to our objective also for this chat today. And I think we touched a little bit on it in the sense of letting go of that self-worth connection to the scale. But yeah, I guess to finish off with, what would be your recommendations for the listeners so that they can truly focus on health and well-being and how they're feeling rather than the numbers or being too harsh on themselves?
Positive comments to ourselves is the unsung hero of medicine. And it sounds sometimes so cheesy, but there's so much science to positive reinforcement and honestly just cheering yourself on. We have the most conversations with ourselves than we do with anybody else. You know, they're unspoken conversations, but we're talking to ourselves all day long. And if you can slowly, or even just once throughout your day, give yourself a little pat on the back, cheer yourself on. If you did that thing that you were trying to do, say in your mind or literally out loud, "Man, I'm awesome. I did that." Or even just a little like, "Yay, that was so good." That actually triggers a lot of hormone changes in response to that positivity. So you're going to make that connection the next time you do that activity. Let's say you want to get to do 25 push-ups in 6 months, but maybe you're starting out with two because all you can do is two. The minute you finish two, you're going to say, "Yes, look how strong I am," every single time. And that just creates that positive reinforcement and that encouragement for yourself to celebrate that. And you can actually test this and just kind of pay attention to your day and see where you have these positive things that you've either said that now actually that action has linked to it has become a habit because you're so looking forward to that positive reinforcement. I did this to myself and when I make a cup of coffee and I walk by and I smell it and I hold on, I'm like, "Oh, this is going to be so good." And I found myself saying that like every day. And it's true. I love my cup of coffee and I feel so good drinking it. And so I'm like, okay, that should be able to work with other areas. If you can just give that positive, that quick little cheer for yourself, even if you do the smallest, seemingly insignificant thing, cheering yourself on is probably the best way that you can actually get to that final goal that you're looking for.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. What a wonderful recommendation or just mindset shift as well. So truly thank you for that, Colleen. Thank you for everything you've shared with us today. As I said, I will make sure to link all your handles in the show notes. And yeah, truly grateful for your time today.
Thank you so much, Lisa. This has been so fun.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Colleen. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.